Dr. Ulrich Spiedel from Auckland University is leading international research into how resilient our country's critical internet services are during emergencies and whether people can actually access vital information when they need it most. Now, when disasters strike, people increasingly rely on the internet for information and support. So why is it so important to understand whether these critical online services will still be accessible and usable during an emergency? Thank you for joining us on the program, Ulrich. My name's Dale. It's a pleasure to welcome you to Radio Wate. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe, morena, Dale. Thanks for having me. Perhaps a first remarks in order on what you'd actually call online services or the internet. So a lot of people might just think it's email and Facebook and websites and apps, and you know that's certainly included, but it's actually way more than that. So most phone traffic, for example, these days is now carried via internet. And when you pay at a store or a petrol station, that goes via the internet too. And pretty much anyone who's in business trading who needs to have, stock level control these days, they have a system where they can, scan their stock in and out. And usually that system communicates with its backend via the internet as well. And so that, for example, helps, big stores reorder and smaller stores too. So the other thing is that in an emergency, you tend to have different phases. So the immediate phase where the focus is on, typically sort of saving lives and keeping people out of harm's way. So that's, when you need a certain type of information then, people need rescue, shelter, water and medical treatment, perhaps evacuation. And so in those phases, situational awareness is generally key. So where you need the civil defense websites up, and your local emergency management websites up and other communication channels available, phone texting, for example. But also quite important, that's not just a matter for locals, it's a disaster area, but it's especially in big disasters or in remote regions, it's also important that outside parties have that situational awareness. So for example, organizations that are watching, from a distance in order to be able to provide relief, coming in from the outside. And, of course, if we're in a disaster, then we'd all want to let our loved ones know what the situation is that we're in. And likewise, they probably want to know what situation, we're in. So that's that first phase. And then there's the immediate aftermath phase. That's when you need access to, say, for example, tools and materials for your cleanup and, makeshift solutions, for accommodation, fixing things. But also perhaps information about, how you can evacuate from where you are and, how you can shift your operations, for example, if you have to, as a business or as an organization. And again, so what's critical here then depends to a good extent on the type of emergency, so whether it's an earthquake or a tsunami or, volcanic eruption or a cyclone or whatever. So plus there's the need for just general communication to be able to organize all of that. So in that phase, for example, you might want to know whether the schools or childcare centers are operating or whether you have to look after the tamariki yourself, for example. Or whether your local building supply store has the type of plywood in stock that you need to plug that hole in the wall with that, whatever the floods caused. So, and that's then followed by another phase of recovery and reconstruction, where it's more likely to be recovery websites and the insurances and the law firms that will be in demand. Mm-hmm. So what we'd like to know is which of those services that are critical at all of those stages might fail on us when they're most needed. And that's often not a question with a trivial answer, because it depends on what piece of network infrastructure fails and where those services and anything that those services depend on are actually located.
Tēnā koe, Ulrich. Well, obviously, you've painted a picture of just how vital modern-day connectivity is. And, of course, if electricity accessibility is compromised, then we've got double the trouble, if you will. Your research has already identified some surprising vulnerabilities, including challenges with accessing these key websites. So how do we go about being better prepared? Are we wholly reliant on electricity to fuel the internet, which will allow the connectivity? Where are the vulnerable points in this model, Ulrich?
So there's a bunch of vulnerable points that you have. So the first vulnerable point, as you point out, is simply things like power. And that actually includes, interestingly enough, the power of the end user device. So, for example, your mobile phone. So one of the things, you know, for example, if you go to civil defense websites in New Zealand at the moment, and emergency management websites, you often find that they serve more than one purpose. So they're being used as a sort of corporate communication tool of the organization that's running it. So, you know, they work, you know, they report on their workshops and their plans and, you know, their strategic things. It's used as a sort of get prepared, get ready, you know, type, you know, resource, you know, sort of telling people, you know, how to plan for an emergency. And then it's also used as a tool to actually present emergency information, you know, at the time when the emergency occurs. So the problem is that, for example, the first two items very often come with, you know, very, very sort of image-rich material, and people have to load that and click through it, you know, before they actually get to the sort of current emergency information, you know, the sort of stuff that they need. And if you're on a mobile phone that's, you know, unable to have been recharged because the power's out and everything, then that can be quite challenging, you know, also when your bandwidth is compromised, for example, because you're having to communicate with a cell site that's further away than the one that you're normally communicating with, because the one you're normally communicating with has failed or has lost its backhaul connectivity. So all those are things. And then, of course, the other thing is when we're looking at the server side of things, so the backend that, you know, all those mobile apps, you know, talk to, then there's always the question, you know, what happens to those fiber optic cables? So, you know, we've seen, you know, during Cyclone Gabrielle, for example, that when you run all your fiber optic cables for a city via the same bridge, then at that point, when that bridge washes out, you lose all of your connectivity. The other problem is that, of course, a lot of the servers that we're using for this aren't necessarily located onshore in Aotearoa, New Zealand. A lot of them are actually sitting overseas. For example, when you try and trace where the website for the Auckland Emergency Management sits, that's most of the time that actually traces over to Australia. While that might keep it out of harm's way in a volcanic eruption, the problem is that that volcanic eruption might also severe the connection, that's the physical connection that we have going over there, and so it might not be accessible, you know, from, say, for example, fiber, you know, bound internet or fiber bound Wi-Fi. So there's all those issues, yeah.
Ulrich, so if we can take the Tauira Whiti just as an example, because it's been hit by these sorts of weather events regularly, and I understand what you're saying. If you've got all your fiber optics going across one bridge and that bridge is washed out, then, you know, entire communities and, in fact, cities could be inaccessible with the net. So what would be an alternative? Should we hedge our bets then and not just run it through one cable down one route? What would you suggest would offer more resilience then in a time of an emergency?
Well, there's a number of things that we can do. So the first thing is, as you say, we can, you know, basically go and aim for diversity. So have multiple connections going via multiple physical routes, and then have the infrastructure basically failing over onto those. And to a certain extent, is already what we're doing. But the problem that we have is we then also need to obviously make sure that the infrastructure that we have has power and is able to sustain that power through an emergency. So you'd be looking at, you know, larger batteries, solar, perhaps a backup generator, depending on what it is, and, you know, generally making sure that, you know, that sort of stuff works. The other thing that we can do in terms of the services is we can sort of look at, well, where are they located and how simple are they? So, you know, generally when I'm in an emergency, I first and foremost need information. I don't need, you know, a fancy design. So things like, for example, textual information are, you know, very, very important, and text is very, very easy and quick to load. And also I'd look at a website, and when I look at a website normally, and then what I'm not looking is at something that's coming from a single server, or that I only need one server in order to access. So in order to get to a website, you initially need what's called a DNS, or domain name system resolution. So this is the thing that basically translates this .www, you know, whatever.com or whatever.org or whatever.govt.nz into an internet IP address, which is essentially just a number. And so this DNS lookup is provided by a server that could literally be anywhere on the planet. So I'd make sure that those servers are replicate it, both, inside New Zealand, and overseas. I'd make sure that, if possible, my server itself is replicated in multiple locations. So if one of those locations gets disconnected, it's still reachable. And then I'd make sure that all of the material that my website references, for example, again, sort of going to the Auckland Emergency Management website, if you're going there to actually look up where your local civil defense center is, you'll be directed to an ArcGIS map, and that ArcGIS map comes from a completely different server than the website itself. So we want to make sure that those servers are reachable as well, from multiple points, and that ideally, we keep the number of things that need to be loaded from other servers to an absolute minimum, and we want to make sure that if those servers fail, that the information that we need is still available, for example, in the form of an address list or something like this, rather than, in the form of a map that loads from another server.
Tēnā koe, thank you, Ulrich. It's not an issue that we consider often, but it's one that we really need to. Thanks for the research project that you are spearheading, and quite obviously we need to address issues that make us absolutely reliant on these services, which at times can be compromised. Dr. Ulrich Spiedel from Auckland University, starting our program today. Thanks. Thank you, Ulrich, for sharing some time with us. Tēnā koe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ngā mihi.